The Plough and the Stars by Sean O'Casey. Audio description introduction for the matinee performance in the Abbey Theatre, Saturday 18th of April 2026 at 2 p.m. Welcome to the introduction to The Plough and the Stars by Sean O'Casey. The play is directed by Tom Creed. Set design is by Jamie Vartan, with costume design by Catherine Fay. Lighting is designed by Stephen Dodd, and the composer and sound designer is Michael John McCarthy. The movement director is Sue Mython and the fight director is Kieran O'Grady. Hair and makeup is by T. Elliott and the voice director is Andrea Ainsworth. The performance begins at 2 p.m. and lasts for 2 hours and 30 minutes, including one 15-minute interval. About the play. The Abbey Theatre is proud to present this centenary production directed by Tom Creed. During its original production in February 1926, the audience rioted. Now regarded as a masterpiece, The Plough and the Stars is an essential part of our understanding of Irish history and Irish theatre. Set amid the tumult of the Easter Rising, Sean O'Casey's masterpiece is the story of ordinary lives ripped apart by the idealism of the time. The residents of a Dublin tenement shelter from the violence that sweeps through the city's streets as the revolution that will shape the country's future rages around them. What kind of Ireland awaits them? Commenting on the project, the director, Tom Creed, says, "This production is a chance to remind us that O'Casey was a trailblazing innovator, as well as a social realist of great humanity and compassion." The opportunity to stage the 100th anniversary production of the play at the Abbey is a rare and precious one, to honour its extraordinary legacy and to remind us how it continues to reflect Ireland back at itself a century after its legendary debut. In his note in the programme, Creed reminds us of the riots of November 2023 on the streets of Dublin, when his production of The Queerfellow was holding its dress rehearsal as buses burned and shops were looted outside. He reminds us that this play is a lens through which to look at the past and a mirror to reflect the present moment. This historical production is filled with costumes and props from productions over the last 100 years, and even the cast carries a legacy of their own, with some having played several different characters over the years. The stark minimalism of the set allows us to be transported to the present day, reflecting on the many conflicts currently taking place around the globe. About the set. The action in this play takes place mostly in a single location, a tenement house in Dublin's inner city, likely just a few minutes from the Abbey Theatre's location. In this production, however, there is no attempt at recreating old, dingy Georgian rooms with rattling windows. Instead, each act is presented in a simple room with plywood walls lightly varnished. It appears almost like a model box that might be prepared to illustrate a stage design, or maybe like a doll's house with little or no details on the walls. When we first arrive in the auditorium, the stage is obscured behind a thick black screen with just a simple wooden dining chair placed in front of it and over on our left. When this screen is drawn up and away for Act 1, we are in the flat belonging to the Clitheroes, Jack and Nora, which they share with a cousin, the young Covey, and Nora's elderly Uncle Peter. This flat is sparsely decorated, with one long wall of plywood about 10 foot in height, with an open doorway at either end, facing us. Alongside the doorway on the left, there hangs a small mirror. In the long space between the two doorways is a plain wooden table with leaves that are folded down but can be used to extend the table. There is a wooden seat at either end of this table. A white teapot sits on the table and a small pile of cloth-covered books and an ornate sword with a filigree handle still in its coloured sheath. Next to this is a small sofa with faded stripy fabric upholstery. A calendar hangs over this sofa with a reproduction image of a painting, a reclining nude woman, over the tearaway paper pages with each month printed on them. Over on the right-hand side of this long room is the second doorway with a wooden stool nearby. This doorway on the right leads out to the main stairwell, while the other doorway goes further into the flat. In Act 2, we move to a pub near the tenement building. The walls of the Clitheroes flat split apart, with two wings on either side opening outwards, and the central wall with the sofa revolving on a large circle. As it turns, a large window passes by, with a set of steps leading up to it. The panel keeps turning, revealing a bar with a long plywood counter, with a few beer taps mounted on it, and three round tables spread around the room, each surrounded by stools. The side walls glide into place, leaving a doorway at the end of the bar counter that leads into a snug. The large window is now at the back, at the far end of the counter. In Act 3, we are outside the tenement building. The plywood wall now reaches the full height and width of the stage. There is one solitary opening at ground level, a doorway with a high threshold that needs to be hopped over. There are openings high up on the wall, as though on the second and third floors. These are simply cut out of the plywood, and characters appear at these windows, leaning out and hollering at the people below on the street. A wooden chair has been left by the doorway for a young resident, Malzer, to sit and get some fresh air. In Act 4, we are moved to the garret rooms of Bessie Burgess. Instead of moving into a cramped space, in this production, the entire stage is cleared, the plywood walls hoisted up into the rafters so that the whole of the Abbey stage is revealed, its stone and brick walls painted black, its pipes and exit signs left unhidden. The centre of the stage still has its revolving disc section, and on it is placed a small plain coffin with a stool beside it and two candles lit on that stool. There is a single wooden chair in this space. Far back in the left-hand corner is a doorway leading to the bedroom in these quarters. Over on the right at the back is another doorway where people can enter the flat from the stairwell. The lighting in this production is stark and bright, like a lamp with no shade. About the cast and their costumes. As the play opens, Uncle Peter is sitting on the chair on our left, holding out a white shirt to dry it, while Fluther Good is on his knees by the doorway on the right, mending the door's lock. Uncle Peter, played by Michael Glenn Murphy, is a man in his 60s, thin and a little shaky on his feet. Uncle Peter's hair is grey and white and curly. He first appears in white long johns. He later gets dressed in the full formal dress of the foresters. Green wool coat with gold braiding and embroidered gold shamrocks, white breeches, top boots and a frilled shirt, the one he was drying earlier. He wears a slouch hat with white ostrich plumes and carries an officer's sword in his bands. Later he wears civilian clothes, a dark grey jacket and trousers with a greying cotton shirt underneath and a flat tweed cap. Fluther Good, played by Dan Monaghan, is in his 30s. He has brown hair slicked back in a side parting and a moustache and small goatee. He wears a grey cotton striped shirt with braces and grey pinstripe trousers and work boots. He also wears a floppy black bow tie. He wears a small blue-grey apron while he works on the lock in the Clitheroes flat. A man of average height, he is quiet and careful. He later wears a dark jacket and bowler hat when he goes to the pub. A neighbour, Mrs. Gogan, is played by Kate Stanley Brennan, and hers is the first voice we hear in this production. A tall, thin woman in her later 30s, she has long, dark brown curly hair tied in a messy bun at the top of her head. She wears a grey cotton shirt under a black waistcoat and a black pinstripe ankle-length skirt with black lace-up boots. A grubby and faded white apron is tied around her slim waist. She is pale, but has fire in her lively brown eyes. The young Covey, played by Thomas Kane Byrne, strides in wearing a charcoal grey dungarees with a white shirt underneath, red tie and workman's boots. He changes into a pair of grey wool trousers held up by braces afterwards and adds a jacket. He is tall and broad with a round paunch. His hair is brown and curly, its wildness fighting against the combing that tries to tame it into a side parting. Both the young Covey and Uncle Peter are relatives of Nora Clitheroe, the lady of the house, played by Kate Gilmore. She is tall and graceful, with long auburn hair and blue eyes. Nora is in her 20s. She arrives home wearing a navy pinstripe ankle-length skirt and matching jacket, with a pale blue floral silk blouse underneath and neat ankle boots. She is fresh-faced with red lips, and her long wavy auburn hair is neatly pinned and styled under her broad-brimmed hat. Her husband, Jack Clitheroe, played by Evan Fitzgerald Doherty, is of average height and trim. He has dark brown hair neatly cut and is clean-shaven. He wears grey trousers and a white striped cotton shirt under a teal wool cardigan that's a little moth-eaten and has smudges of oil on it from his work. He later changes into a mossy green soldier's uniform of the Irish Volunteer Army with Sam Brown belt. Another neighbour, Bessie Burgess, played by Mary Murray, lives on the top floor of the building. Short, with dark brown hair flecked with silver grey, her hair is pulled back severely into a bun. Bessie is almost always drunk. She staggers about in an ill-fitting dark tweed jacket, grey blouse under a threadbare grey cardigan and an ankle-length grey wool skirt. Malzer, played by Evie Mae O'Brien, is a tall but thin girl, about 13 years old. Mrs. Gogan's daughter, Malzer has long brown wavy hair and wears a simple moss-green cotton dress, often covered up with either a brown cardigan or an oversized man's wool jacket. She wears socks and boots on her feet. Her large eyes are sunken with dark circles underneath. She is quiet and calm, standing or sitting with her arms hanging limply by her sides. Captain Brennan, a friend of the Clitheroes, is played by Ash Reezy. He is also in his 20s, sallow skin, dark hair and a neat moustache. He appears wearing the forest green uniform of the Irish Citizen Army, slouch green hat caught up at one side by a small red hand badge and a Sam Brown belt with a revolver in the holster. Lieutenant Langan, a young man with dark brown hair, is played by Donal Herdman. He also wears the mossy green uniform of the Irish Volunteer Army, like Jack Clitheroe, complete with peaked cap and brown leather ammo belt. Rosie Redmond is played by Katrina Ennis, a streetwalker. Rosie is dressed in a turquoise tweed dress with a lace collar and a cream lace shawl hung around her shoulders. Her cotton petticoat peeps out under the hem of her dress, and she wears pale grey socks pulled up to the knees with tan leather heeled shoes. Short and pretty, Rosie's curly auburn hair is pinned loosely with tendrils falling around her face. There is a lilac fabric flower pinned in her hair, and she wears bright red lipstick. The barman in the pub where Rosie plies her wares is played by Michael Teint, a very tall and broad-shouldered man with dark skin and black, tightly curled hair. He has a booming voice and a wry smile. The barman wears a white shirt under a black waistcoat and black trousers with a red bow tie. From time to time, the action in the bar is interrupted by political speeches being made outside. These are the proclamations of the figure in the window, played by Matthew Malone. A man of about 30, he appears first stood in profile against the large window of the bar and stood on a platform. He wears a neat navy pinstripe three-piece suit and leather shoes. He begins speaking loudly and firmly, but as the rhetoric becomes more intense, so too does his delivery, with his hands rising into the air and spittle flying from his mouth. When the figure begins to speak, the patrons in the bar all turn to focus their attention on him. The set revolves slowly so that, as he continues with his rabble-rousing, he is brought to the fore and the bar and its patrons are briefly placed behind the wall. A woman from Rathmines passes by the tenement house when trouble breaks out across Dublin and is played by Marion O'Dwyer. The woman, in her 60s, is dressed in fine clothing, a wine-coloured wool jacket and purple ankle-length skirt with lace-up boots. She has a cameo brooch fastening the neck of her white blouse and black leather gloves that match her handbag. Her silver-grey hair is neatly pinned under her black velvet hat. She wears a white fox fur stole draped over her shoulder and drop earrings. She speaks in a plummy South Dublin accent that immediately sets her apart from the other characters. Much later on, we meet Corporal Stoddart, played by Fintan Kinsella, a young man in his 20s with dark hair, and Sergeant Tinley, played by Conor Wolfe O'Hara, also in his 20s. Both men are dressed in green World War I British Army uniforms. Heavy wool khaki jacket and trousers, with their trousers tightly wrapped in their puttees, or leg wraps, and then tucked into their leather boots. They wear round metal Brodie helmets with chin straps and carry rifles. That concludes the audio description introduction to this centenary production of The Plough and the Stars. It was prepared by me, Breedhne Rugain, who will facilitate the touch tour at 12:30 beforehand, as well as provide audio description for the performance. Audio description at the Abbey Theatre is supported by the Arts Council and Arts and Disability Ireland. ADI also provide updates about other audio described and captioned performances. To subscribe to their mailing list, text Access Arts to 51444 or head to www.adiarts.ie for more information. Thank you. Gurdh Mahagoif.